The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I am very excited to bring you Greg Buford, who is not only just an EFM, but actually a full-time author and has some really fun books that are out there. And I wanted Greg to come on the show to talk a little bit about not only just the creative process, but all of the things that go into actually publishing something that you bring to the world. And, you know, how is that process like? And how is it like doing that while in the Foreign Service? Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you. So actually, you've had a number of really fabulous tours, among them Japan, India, France, Cambodia, Switzerland. How does, you know, the tour that you're on sort of influence your writing, or does it? It seems like you take some flavor, shall we say, from some of the places that you visited and put them into your writing work. But what's that relationship like between the post you're at and the work that you're doing as a writer?
For sure. I mean, my travels with my wife in the Foreign Service has really informed everything I've done. I mean, my work is about my travels. My travels are about my work. Those are the two things I love the most is, you know, meeting, enjoying, experiencing new cultures. And then I also love writing. So it's a perfect combination of the two. It's kind of interesting because when I met my wife, she was very, very happy living in Texas and not traveling and really didn't know, she would say, very much about what's outside of the United States or even Texas for that matter. And many, many years ago, we fell in love very quickly. I met her on a dare. That's another story. It's in the book. But met her on a dare. We fell in love. And I had a contract to go teach English in Japan. And so I invited her. Well, I proposed, I guess. That actually kind of went like this. I told her, well, I got that job that I sort of mentioned to you before we fell in love. And I got this contract to go to Japan. I'd really like to go. And I feel like if I don't go, I'm going to always regret it. And she said, well, I guess I'm going with you then. And so I
decided. True love. It was meant to be.
Right, exactly. So that led to a proposal. I took her to Japan with me. And then she got the travel bug and became very interested in the Foreign Service because I talked about it all the time. And so, in fact, when I took the Foreign Service exam after we got back from teaching English in Japan for 3 years, mm-hmm. She didn't even know what it was. She'd heard me talk about it. But I totally geeked out on foreign policy and that sort of thing, studied international relations. I was a teaching assistant in grad school for a class of graduate students for international relations. I was really into it, is what I'm trying to say. Uh-huh. She not so much. And I talked her into taking the Foreign Service exam. And she didn't want to do it, but I talked her into it. I said, you know, you're not going to be really happy following me around the world. Come on, why don't you take it? She finally did. Long story short, she passed with almost a perfect score, and I failed,
which
is the premise of the story. Corporate man, me, being dragged around the world with my kids while my wife does my dream job.
But that's hilarious.
The really funny irony of it is that turns out I absolutely loved that job taking care of my kids, and it also enabled me to write.
Amazing. Wow, what a story. And to be like, what were you doing before taking the Foreign Service exam and going out to teach English in Japan? I mean, did you have some totally different thing that you thought you might want to do, or was the Foreign Service always the plan? And then it just sort of, you met your wife, and of course, everything changed at that point.
You know, I never really knew what I wanted to do, except I liked writing, mm-hmm. and I had this fascination with international anything, and I won an essay contest when I was in high school, which led to my first overseas experience. The Conroe Noon Lions Club in Conroe, Texas, sent me to Belgium for a summer where me and my host family's son spent the entire summer driving around Western Europe trying to figure out which country had the most beautiful girls. We did not
as one does
conclusion, but we sure had a good time and it was great fun. And so I'm going to pause there for a second because I forgot your original question.
Oh no, it's just, you know, I mean, there's so many paths to the Foreign Service, right? And I find it funny that, you know, you had sort of this buildup of like, you went to Japan and you were taking the test and your wife was kind of like, well, I don't know what this thing is. And then all of a sudden she's the Foreign Service officer and you're the trailing spouse. How did you feel when that happened exactly? Because, you know, for those of us who are married in the Foreign Service, you know, your spouse has to be on board. So at this point, like, she has your dream job. And what do you say to yourself? Like, what do I do at this point? Right. And you have kids at this point. So, you know, talk to me about that process of, did you purposely decide as a couple, like, oh, I'm not going to take the Foreign Service exam? Or like, how did you kind of morph from, I want to be an FSO to, actually, I'm kind of liking this dad thing and I think I'm going to write?
Well, when it was a very humbling experience when I did not pass the Foreign Service exam, and my wife, who assumed she would never pass, passed with almost a perfect score. And she really had no intention of actually joining. She was just taking the test to get me off her back. And when she passed, she said, no, let's don't do this. And I said, wait a minute, you're going to love this job. We should go. We should travel. We want to travel. That's the whole point, is to travel and experience. And I again, sort of talked her into it. She learned about the Foreign Service. She got interested. And pretty soon she was on board. And she said, what about you? And I said, well, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Well, I worked for Dell, the computer corporation at the time. And Dana's first post was Chennai, India. Mm-hmm. And Dell, I became one of the first six people in Dell, India. At that time, they offered me a job there. So we went to India and we really had a great time there. And when it turned out that my wife was not able to conceive a second child, we decided to adopt. And at that point, I thought, you know, I was working for Dell, I was making a ton of money, but I was really, really invested in, you know, my first child. And then we adopted this second child. And I really wanted to take the time to, really give that child, particularly the adopted child, what she needed. And I just really loved spending time with my kids. And so when I went to her with the proposal that, you know, I could quit my job and take care of the kids full time, we can get rid of this nanny that has somewhat different values. And she was not at all surprised. And it turns out I loved it. And then, of course, Dana immediately became pregnant, which led to number three.
Of course.
We called him the surprise.
So you have three children now?
I do. We have three children. So I was a stay-at-home dad for about 11 years, taking care of those guys. And it was great fun. And I tell you, it worked out really well because Dana loves the Foreign Service. And I would say that I'm not the perfect parent by any stretch of the imagination, but I can tell you, I learned that there's really nothing I could do better. It was really something I enjoyed and felt I was good at. And I really felt like I was at the top of my game when I was taking care of my kids full time. And we're still great friends now that they're all adults.
I love that, you know, and I think that is one of the gifts of the Foreign Service, if you look for it, in that sometimes, you know, you don't get the post you want, or maybe you think, oh, I'm getting assigned there. And if you just open yourself up to experiences and what something new can bring that maybe you hadn't thought of, I mean, there are so many gifts that can result out of that. And sometimes the choice that you don't make is sometimes better than the one that you would have chosen, right? So I love that story. I think that's really amazing. And what a gift to your children, too.
Yeah, I feel like it was a gift to me, but sure, my children are great. I have no regrets. It was a wonderful experience. And the only regret I have about taking care of my kids full time for all those years is that when we moved back to the United States after Dana left the Foreign Service the first time, she's going back in now.
Oh, wow.
I spent about a year looking for a job and wondering, oh my gosh, am I ever going to get back in the game? And was worried about it. And then after I got back in the game, boy, that seemed really silly. I should have just enjoyed that last year as much as I could. But you know, no regrets, still really close to the kids. It was definitely the right decision for me and the whole family.
And so you're a stay-at-home dad, you're enjoying yourself, you're living the life, right? International man of leisure, ha ha ha. Those of us who have kids know it's not exactly leisure. But how does the writing bit come about? You said you always liked writing, but you know, I think a lot of us have ideas of maybe sitting down to write a book, but it's a pretty daunting task. I mean, Had you always written? Was it something that sort of grew on you because you had some time in the Foreign Service? How did that process come about?
I had always dabbled. I was always interested from a very young age. Every time I went to the counselor at school, you know, I took those tests. They're supposed to tell you what you're supposed to do. And they all came up writer. And everybody from the counselor to the cafeteria lady said, sure, but maybe you should just get a degree in business and then you can do anything. And so that's kind of the way I went because, I don't know, it seemed like it was just impossible to make a living as a writer, but I always wanted to do it. Always something I always enjoyed. And when I wound up in India and decided to take the plunge to taking care of the kids full time, let's be honest, I was a bit of a man of leisure because when we were living in India, like many foreign service folks, you know, we still had a full-time cook and driver and household help to do a lot of these chores that I would have otherwise done at that time when we were in India. So it was actually a pretty charmed existence. And so I began logging the funny things that were happening. India is a very funny place. It's a very exotic place. There's a lot of great, funny, interesting stories. I began writing those down. And pretty soon, I had been sending all this, these writings to friends and family. And this was back, you know, even before, you know, social media really. And they said to me, Greg, you got to put this into a book. And the structure of the book was already there because I had been sort of taking a journal and I put it all together and that became book number one.
And was that, kept an American house husband in India?
That's right. That's right.
And so how long did it actually take you to write it?
Well, from the moment I first sent that silly letter back to friends at home with a funny story about India to the time it became published, gosh, it was, you know, almost 15 years.
Oh, wow.
But there was a lot of life that intervened, you know. I still had not decided I was really going to make an attempt to be a writer, to be a commercially successful writer and do it for a living. We left India and then went to Paris, and then I didn't have a household full of, you know, help, and I was doing everything myself, and I had much less time to write, but always kept going. I think it's really important as a writer it takes a really long time. It takes a lot of perseverance. I always made it a point to write a little bit every day, even if it sucked, even if I had no time to do it, even if I was in a bad mood because I'd changed the 20th diaper of the day. I always made a point to do it a little bit. And finally, what happened was one day when my oldest child, Cole, who now goes by Holly, said to me around, I don't know, I was in my 40s, and she was being a teenager that day. And she said something to me like she was angry because I probably told her to, you know, put up the dishes or something. And she said, you're never going to finish that book you've been talking about so long.
Oh, low blow. Oh, no.
I immediately didn't say a word, but boy, let me tell you, nothing motivated me like that to finish that book I've been working on so long, because they had heard it was the soundtrack of their childhood. The dad was working on this book, and I finished it within a year, and that was book number one.
And so you have this manuscript, shall we say, but a lot of people have something that they've written, and it never actually becomes a published thing. How does it go to something where... I mean, honestly, it looked like it did really well, at least from Amazon. And the reviews are amazing. Like, you guys have to check out his book. The graphics for the cover are really great. So how does it come from it's in your computer? Well, first it's in your head, right? And then you take 15 years, you get it in your computer. And then what happens next? I mean, do you just self-publish? Do you look for a publisher? What do you do?
Well, I spent, when I had a pretty good draft of book number one, I spent a great deal of time, a decade, trying to interest agents and traditional publishers to take on my book. Never got a single response, really. I even won an award and was a finalist for a number of things and
wow.
Number of awards and still got no play whatsoever. So finally, again, challenged by my teen, I decided, well, I'm just going to go ahead and do this. And lo and behold, kept an American house husband in India did really well. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised, but my wife Dana said she was not surprised because she's absolutely my biggest fan. Oh, I poke a lot of fun at her in my books, uh-huh. but I poke fun at myself too, which makes it okay, I guess. And she absolutely loves that. And she said she was not surprised. And she is absolutely my biggest fan and the one who tells me all the time, you need to write full time. You can do this.
That's amazing. I mean, what a great thing to publish something and then to have that, you know, I don't know how else to put it except for critical acclaim, you know, it's a fancy word, but like the people enjoyed something that you wrote, right? I mean, that's why you write for is not, oh, yeah. you know, part of it is obviously to express and to like capture all of the funny moments and experiences and like, but to be able to share that with other people and to have people respond and say, hey, I really like that. I mean, that's part of, you know, why I do this podcast too, is that you produce something and people are like, oh, I really like this thing or that thing, or this thing really helped me or resonated with me. I mean, it's really fantastic. So, I mean, bravo, fantastic.
Thank So you
published this book, and then what makes you think about doing another one? And how fast was that compared to the first one? Because 15 years is a while, right?
Well, between book one and book two, I wrote another book, which is called Making Ghosts Dance. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very different book. It's a fiction. It's a thriller set in Cambodia. And what happened there was we went to Phnom Penh and I was very we had a great time there. We were there 3 years, but it was the most difficult post for us. And one of the reasons was that I was really disturbed. The whole family was disturbed, by the very obvious, sex tourism and the sex trade and particularly the child sex trade in Cambodia, which was, very much a thing and very, very open to a great degree. And it was really disturbing. And so, I had to write that book. So, the book is fiction, but it's the result of the worst nightmare that I have. If you read the book, you'll see what I mean. But, I really had to write that book because I went there and I saw what was going on. I was about to do some volunteer work there to help rescue children out of sexual slavery when the organization I was going to volunteer for basically got shut down mm-hmm. in the country. And I needed an outlet. And so I did a lot of research. I didn't know what I was going to write. I ended up writing fiction, but the situations in the book are very real. I researched it thoroughly. I did a lot of interviews, talked to a lot of people, did a lot of, you know, it was, and so that was really something I wrote, you know, kept, I wrote it to have a, I really wanted to have a something for my family. Mm-hmm. You know, a family history, if you will, that my family could enjoy one day. But, you know, Making Ghost Dance, I wrote to really to say something and to really let, to I don't know, maybe change minds, make people aware. And so that's why I wrote that book. So book number two, I it's something I had to do while I was in Cambodia.
It sounds like it's a very different feel, right? I mean, two totally different things. To go back to your first book, you mentioned you wrote it sort of as a record for your family. Have your children read the book? What do they think?
Yeah.
If they have read it?
So
they're like, Dad, I don't remember it that way.
Well, I get a little bit of that. You know, it's funny how I've also, as I've written these sort of family histories, I've also realized that people don't remember things the same way.
They don't.
And people remember
yeah.
different things. And a lot of times for the Paris book, that the one that's just come out, I actually sat down with the family made them talk to me about, you know, what they remembered and, you know, got them in the right mood at the right time. And they were very forthcoming with stories and stuff. And so I included a lot of that in there that I didn't actually remember or remembered a different way.
Interesting. My husband will always tell me, he's like, yeah, you remember when we did that? I'm like, honestly, I don't even remember what I did yesterday. So I just believe him because he actually remembers more than I do. But it is interesting how with memory, people will remember things a different way. Because I think, you know, we all come from a certain perspective and it's different. And It's amazing sometimes an event can be looked at in so many different ways based on who is telling the story, right?
Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, for the longest time, well, you know, the book came out, first of the Kept in India came out when the kids were quite a bit younger, and they kind of irritated me because they were like, oh, that's cool, but they never really read it. Mm-hmm. And so it, you know, it kind of hurt me, honestly, that they Aww. Didn't read it because, you know, I'd spent so much time working on this. But finally, when they did, boy, they were really surprised. And they're like, Dad, I can't believe you wrote this. And you know, my son, Sam, he recently was reading Kept in Paris, and he never said he liked it. He never gave me any praise about it, really. But he sat on the couch for a good hour laughing his rear end off while he read it. And so that, you know, that made me realize that they liked it. And I was happy. That was really gratifying that they enjoyed it. And yeah, because it's really for them.
So they didn't have any like, Dad, why are you telling about us in that, you know, time that X happened or, you know, whatever it is. They kind of rolled with it, it sounds like.
Really, they did. Although I'll tell you, I've alluded to it a moment ago that my oldest child, who was born Cole, now considers himself female, mm-hmm. and she goes by Holly. And so for her, you know, we had a good long discussion about how to address that in my books. And initially, when she was younger, she said to me, you know, I don't want you to use my old name at all. That, mm-hmm. that's not who I am anymore. And I don't want you to use that. And we talked about it for a very long time. And I said, you know, you are who you are now, and I love you now, but you were who you were then, mm-hmm. and then you were Cole, and Cole was really my best friend for a lot of years. And there's got to be a way where, you know, I don't want to give that up, but I understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And so we agreed that we would keep Holly's old name in the books, but in a future book, I intend to address the fact that Holly has decided, well, not decided, Holly is now female. Mm-hmm. She considers herself female, and address that in a way that's that I think is is true to how Holly feels today and mm-hmm. who she is today, and is a very, very sensitive to her situation and her life today, I guess is a good way to say it.
And, you know, it sounds like you put a lot of things that are actually quite personal into your work, even if it is a funny book, right? I mean, and I think that is a choice by the artist or the writer or, you know, the creator of whatever kind of, whether it's a book or a film or something that somebody creates. And I tend to resonate with books like that just because I feel like they're more authentic and the author is coming from a place of authenticity. But on the same token, it's also a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Revealing, maybe. And traditionally, the Foreign Service is kind of a conservative environment. Nobody really wants to, you know, kind of expose different parts of their life that really aren't related to work. Did you find that there was any sort of, I don't know, strangeness about opening up your life like that in a work like that people can just purchase on Amazon? Was that at all an issue for you?
Well, I talked to Dana, my wife, about this a lot. I mean, particularly in book one, there's a lot of, well, to give you an example, when in book one, well, when we were living in India, when it became clear that Dana was not able to have a second child, it was not hard for me to wrap my head around international adoption. I'd known people had adopted internationally. And it was something I'd thought about for years, because there are so many children out there who need homes in this country and around the world. And Dana said at the time, she was not initially on board with adopting. She was concerned, she said, and she felt really terrible about saying this, really, about admitting it. She said, what if I can't feel the same way about an adopted child? And she said, I don't, you know, I birthed the first child, you know, he was with us from day one. Mm-hmm. This is different. Is it going to feel different? How, and she didn't know how to think about that. And And then we went to the orphanage and we visited, and she quickly realized that she could do this. And she, as soon as we met Nina, she fell madly in love.
Oh,
but you know, I asked her when I wrote this book, I said, what do you think about this? I mean, I don't want to make you look bad or something, but this is what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's and personal. Said, it's a really personal decision, and maybe not something you want to share with the world, right? Through a novel.
Yeah. And though Dana has never asked for like editorial approval of my work, but I did talk to her about this and I said, you know, I won't share this if you don't want me to.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no. She said, I think a lot of people maybe feel that way. Maybe
they do, and they just don't say anything. Nothing,
they just don't say it.
They don't.
And I think it's humanizing and it's true. And then we came out the other end, and I love Nina. And so she was absolutely on board with sharing that. So yeah, it's kind of weird a little bit. She sometimes says to people, you know, read one of my husband's books and you'll know more about our lives than
I can tell you over tea.
but what's happened is that, and it kind of surprised me, but people reach out to me and they say, man, your book was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But they tell me what really, really they liked about it the most was that it really resonated, the human stories resonated, the times when I'm self-deprecating or the times when I'm learning something or just frustrated or that we're being real people. And it kind of surprised me in a way that people want to read that. I had that sort of information in there. And many times I thought maybe I should remove this. But then I realize now that that would have really been a bad idea because
it would have taken away from it. Because, you know, I think at the end of the day, I mean, everyone wants to present a great picture to the world, right? Like the Facebook version of events.
Hmm.
And it's not that these things haven't been thought by everybody. It's just that nobody wants to talk about certain things because they are kind of sensitive and you just don't know how people are going to react or take the information. And I think by you speaking up, other people feel like, yeah, I thought that too. And I've been in that situation. I can totally relate, right? Because it's a really nice thing when you're reading a book and you can almost feel like you're there with the author because you're like, gosh, I have felt that before too, you know, or I've been frustrated about that. And I think that vulnerability and sharing a piece of your life is really what connects you to other people through books. You know, I think it's one of the amazing things about reading something that someone else has written.
Yeah, I definitely didn't want to create that highlight reel, you know, I wanted to make it real.
Yeah, no. And I think the reality and where the grit is kind of what the essence of life is in a way sometimes, because that's where, you know, you really see what people are made of and how they think and the choices that they make, right? Not only when things are good, but also when things are kind of difficult. And the Foreign Service, you know, the life is, while it's cushy in some aspects, it's really difficult in others. And there are unique challenges, and especially being overseas. And, you know, I think all Foreign Service families at some point run into those issues, you know, no matter where they are. But I think it is a unique set of circumstances. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody's human and we all feel things. And it's nice to know that other people do too.
Yeah.
So it must have been a great experience because you went from kept an American house husband in India to a follow-on, which is in Paris. Are the books similar? Are they very different? Are they kind of written in the same style?
They are, but I tell you, they're different in that India is a very exotic place, and we had people working in our home, and we had, you know, cattle that would sit in the street and snarl traffic for hours, and they, you know, all the good fun that comes from being in a place like India. And it's so very different from daily life here. And then there was also the drama of adopting our child Nina and just adapting to a at that time a developing country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's different in that respect, but the humor is the same. Somewhat the style of humor is the same. But in Paris, you know, we didn't have a household full of people that became part of our lives. And you know, living in Paris as opposed to living in a city like Chennai, which is much very different and smaller in many ways.
Yeah, night and day, honestly.
What's that?
Paris and Chennai, night and day, very different.
Correct. Correct. So in Paris, I included in the book a lot more sort of, I included some more history. The book Kept in Paris has a lot more, reads more like a guidebook. I talk about the places we visited and some of the history and that sort of thing, much more than I do in the Indian book. There's a little bit of that, but there's more of that in the Paris book. It has a lot more for in terms of a guide for people if they wanted to use it to travel around.
Hmm. So I have to ask this question because I think there are a lot of secret foreign service authors out there or would like to be authors, right? And they are worried that, if I write something, it might impact my spouse's career with the State Department. Or maybe I have to send it to the great office at the State Department that is going to censor my work. Were any of these concerns for you?
Well, I think about it. But for one thing, as far as Dana's career goes, she trusts me, which is a key ingredient to successful marriage. She trusts me. She says that a lot. She doesn't review my work, like I said, before I put it out there. And so far as she's concerned, I haven't crossed the line in any way. And so I try to put information out there that's close to being something you might not want to say, but I try to walk that line and I think I've done it successfully so far. But I don't think about it too much. Don't worry about it too much. I mainly think about, protecting my family. Mm-hmm. But Dana says, write what you need to write and we'll apologize later if I fit in text my career. But I tell you, with Making Ghosts Dance, that's a very, very different book. And very many of the situations in that book are true to life.
And not very favorable to the host country, I would add.
Well, perhaps not. And I've had some pretty high level American diplomats tell me that, you might not want to go back to Cambodia, but I don't know if anybody there even knows about my book, but yes, it could irritate some folks, but it also takes a very hard look at the American Foreign Service. Mm-hmm. And it takes a hard look at what a lot of American diplomats get up to when they go to places where there's a great deal of poverty and there's a ready sex trade.
Yeah.
And the stories that are in that book that have to do with diplomats and near diplomats dabbling and not only dabbling, but absolutely, getting into this world in the wrong way and taking part in it, are true. There's some things in there that might ruffle some feathers, but are very true. And I needed to say.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair. And, my hat is off to you because it takes a certain amount of courage to say things like that, because there is a lot of internal pressure in the department. Where it comes from, I don't know, to not say anything, because I think there's always this conservative response of like, oh, you don't want to do that because somebody, whoever the somebody might be, might not like that or might, it might ruffle feathers. And so, my hat is off to you for writing the things that you see and you care about, including, not just your family's experiences, but other things that you see in countries where you feel like, if I say something, I can make a difference. So, good job.
I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I've never gotten the call yet.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see what happens.
And I hate to say it, but a lot of times the things that people worry might happen aren't actually real,
Right.
And I think, there's a lot of smart people in the department, and I've seen so much, at least, in my, almost 13 years in the service, of like, people are like, oh, I'm not going to do that. But I'm like, but it's not really a big deal, like, oh, well, somebody might get mad. I'm like, well, who's the somebody? And then nobody can ever say. So,
right.
But anyway, so at this point, you've now published several novels and you mentioned you were working for Dell and then you stopped. I mean, are you a full-time writer now? Is this something that an eligible family member could do to earn extra income full-time?
Yes. So we came back to the United States about 11 years ago because my mother was very ill and we needed to come back and spend time with family. And so now our kids are grown. My mother, unfortunately, is no longer with us. And we're in a place where we talked about when my wife left the Foreign Service years ago, that if we ever had an opportunity to go back, that she really wants to do it. And she loves the job, mm-hmm. thinks it's the best career ever. And so I've been working for Capital Metro, which is the transit authority here in Austin, for the last 7 years. And I left that job in September and moved with Dana to Virginia while she's learning Russian. I've also been learning Russian. And Dana, like I said, she's my biggest fan. And I think a lot about, you know, what that income that we need from my job that I had, I need to find another job. But she's telling me, you know, you don't need to. You don't need to do it for me, and you don't need to do it for our retirement. You know, you have an opportunity right now to do more writing than you've ever had a chance to do. You're starting to make some money at it. And so just do it full time. And so that's where I'm at right now. I don't know exactly what the future's going to bring, but so far, sales of book number 3, The Captain Paris, are pretty good.
Nice.
And it's feeling like I can make a living doing this, and I'm going to give it a shot.
Fantastic. I love that. I mean, what a transformation from, I'm going to join the Foreign Service and I'm an, you know, English teacher in Japan, to, oh, I'm a stay-at-home dad, but now, you know what, I'm going to write full-time because that's what I'm going to do. I mean, I think even though you're technically not in the Foreign Service, I think you've reinvented yourself enough times to be an honorary FSO at this point, even as an EFM. So, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, we're always moving to a new country and saying, okay, what am I going to do here now, and which thing? And I think the things that you've done have even been more dramatic than that, because, you know, sometimes you do the same job at least at the embassy. So you kind of sort, at least you hope, you know, you're doing the same job, so you know what you're kind of doing, but you've kind of run the whole gamut of things. So, I mean, what a great life.
Well, I did eventually pass the Foreign Service exam on the first day.
But you turned it down, it sounds like.
I did turn it down because we were about to go to Paris and we just had little Sam, and after almost 2 years of taking care of the kids full time in India, that's what I wanted to do. And I would have made a darn good diplomat, let me tell you, really would have. But at the time, I wanted to, one, make sure that Dana didn't have to give up that assignment to go to Paris. I was very interested in that. But also, I was really enjoying what I was doing with the kids and wanted to keep doing that. And it was really hard for me to even imagine going back to a full-time career at that time. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a great decision. Although I still wonder to this day what might have been, I tell you.
Oh, there's so many roads not taken, right?
Yes.
But it sounds like the one that you did take actually ended up pretty well for you. So what's
next? I'm enjoying
it. Yeah, what's next on the writing horizon for you?
Well, for one thing, I'll tell you that this is really exciting news that I got, is that Kept, an American House Husband in India, has recently been optioned for film.
Ooh, wow. Congrats. Oh, my goodness. That is big news.
A production company out of L.A. wants to make a limited series out of it. And and they hired me to write the screenplay, at least the pilot episode. And so I recently finished that, and they're shopping that around. But we're about to go to Turkmenistan. My wife is going to go ahead of me for about a month for family reasons, but I'll get there soon. And I'm feeling like Turkmenistan is going to offer a great deal of book material. And I know Turkmenistan is a really unusual country, really isolated country, and it's going to be frustrating and difficult. But I feel like, you know, in life in general, you can get angry, you can cry, or you can laugh about these things. And I'm going to try my best to laugh about it. And I'm going to write a book definitely about being in Turkmenistan in the same style. But I'm also working on some other fiction, completely different, that hopefully will come out within a year.
That's fantastic. We're going to look forward to seeing the film version of it. When are they going to produce it? I know you just said you had finished the screenplay, but is there some kind of like production timeline? And
do you get
a cameo? They should give you a cameo.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun? So it's currently It's currently only on option, which means that, you know, the most likely scenario, it never gets made into anything, but maybe it will. There's no production timeline right now. The pilot episode is out in front of a whole bunch of folks, but anyway, we'll see. And I will certainly, certainly let you know. But I'm trying to think of the guy who, who is the guy that was the sexiest man alive for 2021?
Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah. I'm the wrong person to ask.
He was Paul Rudd. You know who Paul Rudd is?
Yes, Paul Rudd.
Funny story is that you're talking about a cameo for me. When we were talking about, you know, when this option first came along, this production company said, Greg, who would you like to play you? And I said, I don't know. I don't know any actors. And they said, no, just like pick A-list actors. We're not going to get any of them for this film, but pick it like anybody you know. And I didn't know. So I asked a bunch of my female friends. I said, who would play me? And a couple of them said, oh, Paul Rudd.
Oh, no way.
And the very next day, Paul Rudd was named sexiest man alive of 2020.
That is so funny. That is hilarious. Oh, my gosh.
It's a pretty funny running joke in my family, but we're not going to get Paul Rudd to play me. I'm telling you that. But I thought that was pretty funny. But anyway, but the tagline that the production company came up with for the series, if it's ever made, is "Nice guys finish happy." That's their tagline. Aww. That they came up with.
Well, on that note, Greg, it's been so fun having you on the show. I mean, what a great story. The things that you can do while in the Foreign Service and living the life with your kids all around the world, getting film options, sexiest man alive, Paul Rudd might play it. Hey, you never know, right? Weirder things have happened. But no, thanks for being on the show, Greg, and good luck with all of your literary adventures, wherever they take you next.
Thank you very much. And I just want to say that I love hearing from people, Foreign Service people, other people, anybody, reach out, ask me how to publish a book, talk to me about anything. I really, really love to hear from people. And I try to answer anything that anybody sends to me. And I just really love to hear from folks and reach out anytime. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram. I have a website, gregorybuford.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Greg.
All righty.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.